You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut in pouches that gives you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz that you're used to without tobacco. Fully Loaded Chew comes in 9 flavors and is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine. To give us a try, head on over to fullyloadedchew.com for a $1 can of chew with free shipping when you enter the code OUTDOOR1, OUTDOOR, and the number 1. For more information on our product line, visit fullyloadedchew.com.
The Houndsman XP podcast is fueled by Joy Dog Food. Joy Dog Food has a rich tradition of supporting the Houndsman of America. Founded in 1945, Joy is proud of its history and the relationship it has built with the American Houndsman. And in 76 years, there's never been a recall. Made with 100% American-made high-quality ingredients, Joy Dog Food has one of the highest calorie-dense formulas on the market. For 76 years, this made-in-America product has kept hunting dogs in the field day after day, season after season. And when we say made in America, Joy has a long track record of fighting for American freedoms by being on the front lines against the animal rights movement and their extremist tactics. Joy will fuel your hounds and fight for your freedoms, fueled by Joy. This is the Houndsman XP Podcast.
Good dog, get that bird. Get that bird in here.
The original podcast for the complete Houndsman. The podcast that represents our lifestyle of extreme performance.
Get up there! Get him! Get him! Yeah! Good boy!
Good boy, Ranger!
Uniting houndsmen across the globe, from east to west, north to south.
You know, if you're going to catch a cat or a lion, you know, you have to have teamwork.
We take you to the wildest places on earth.
Yeah, so how many days a week do you spend out there?
As much as I can, to be honest with you. Anytime that I get, I'm out there.
Join us for every heart-pounding adventure on Houndsman XP.
I'll tell you like I tell everyone else, I'm going to hunt whether you're here or not, so you might as well be here.
On this episode of the Houndsman XP Podcast, I had the opportunity to go to Black and Tan Days in Olney, Illinois. That's hard to say. Olney, Illinois. Anyway, I am not very well versed in the modern day Black and Tan and barely literate in the history of Black and Tans. So I recruited Jeff Wood to sit down and talk to me about Black and Tans, talk about his juice dog, and some of the older Black and Tans and where they came from, and then what Black and Tan breeders are up to in 2022. Jeff and I go way back a long ways. We were hunting together in the western side of Indiana and eastern Illinois back in the early 1990s when he was campaigning the original juice dog. Jeff has been a lifelong Black and Tan fancier. You're going to want to listen all the way to the end in typical fashion. Once the recorder goes off, the good stories come out. And I'm not going to spoil it for you other than to say this story involves Black and Tan coonhounds, gangsters, and moonshine. Let's get that tailgate down and get the doors on the Old South Dog Box thrown open and get some black and tans on the ground. It's time to dump the box. Briar Creek Kennels is your complete hound hunting outfitter. Boots, lights, collars, and tracking equipment. Dog boxes, kennel supplies, collars, clothes, squalors. Whew, they have it all. Briar Creek Kennel is a Garmin and Dogtra dealer. Owner Chris Girth will ensure Briar Creek Kennel customers will get top of the industry customer service. Whether you purchase from their website or you find them at a major coonhound event, Chris and his staff will share expert knowledge and experience about every product they offer. Chris Girth is a top competitor and breeder of hounds. He knows what gear you need to be successful. Look for Briar Creek Kennels on the web for a complete online store or look at their fully stocked trailer at any major coonhound event. Briar Creek Kennels, offering a hound hunting public generations of excellence. How long we known each other, Jeff? Well, I think we go back when we first start running into each other at the hunts.
Back in the late 80s, I'm guessing.
It had to be. Late 80s, early 90s.
Yep.
And so I'm with Jeff Wood, and we're in Olney, Illinois at the Black and Tan Days, and Jeff and I go back a long time. You've been the sheriff of which county is that?
Edgar County, Illinois.
Edgar County for the last 8 years.
Yep.
Going to run for another four?
Yep, another four.
Are you running unopposed?
Nope. Got competition. Everybody wants my job.
What's going to happen? You might retire this fall if you get beat, won't you?
I might, yeah.
Yeah.
Have to coon hunt for a living.
Yeah.
Make some big money.
There you go. There you go. So, yeah, the reason we're talking, I want to talk to you is because you've had some pretty good dogs and been involved in black and tans for a long time. And tell us about the type of dogs you've been hunting all these years, Jeff.
Well, I've been hunting black and tans for a little over 50 years, I guess. I've been in the Black and Tan Association for just shy of 50 years. I'm probably the youngest old member in the association.
Right.
Joined when I was a kid. Back then, I eat and breathe black and tans. I've always kind of liked a track dog. I still like to listen to a dog run a track. Tree dog, like a good mouth. But I, you know, a lot of guys say they don't care what a dog looks like as long as it can tree a coon. But I kind of still like to lead a pretty dog, and I like to lead a pretty horse. So.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it's just as cheap to feed a good-looking one as it
that's
is
right,
a sorry
that's
one.
Right. And they're out there.
That's right. And I've always found that if you got a dog that you like looking at, you'll put a little more into them.
Yeah, you will.
But you can also go back and say that they all look pretty good when they're doing their job
when
right.
When they're treated, they all look pretty.
Yeah, yeah. So, but you have one dog in particular.
Yeah.
You had Juice.
I had dogs back in the early 90s, Black Juice, bought him off a trade row. He was a grand show champion when I bought him. I made him a grand knight, a high-scoring black and tan male in the world hunt. He was a all-around dog, good strike dog, outstanding tree dog, slobber mouth. I know a lot of people have seen these ads and pictures. He had slobber all over him running down his sides.
Yeah.
Had the foresight, I guess, or lucky to collect him years ago. I just lived 25 miles from Dr. Scott, who was big into that at the time. Stored up quite a bit of semen on him, so I'm still able to continue that line of dogs. I'm hunting second and direct sons and grandpups of him right now, 30 years later.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I mean, you think about that wasn't really talked about a lot back in the early 90s about, you know, drawing these dogs and storing semen and stuff like that, but you had a vet close to you that was already doing that
right.
Sort of stuff.
He was Doc Scott was a pioneer in it. I think he was affiliated with the University of Illinois at the time. He was a, you know, just kind of a founder of a lot of artificial breeding, frozen semen, embryo transplants. Especially, I think dairy cattle was what he really got started in.
I was going to ask if he's doing other stuff too.
Dairy cattle and then beef cattle was his big thing. When he started the dog business, the dogs were kind of a side venture for him, but the cattle was his big thing. But like I say, I was fortunate to live close to him. He was raised in the same part of the county I was. My family and his family knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he kind of took me under his wing a little bit, and so I got to spend a lot of time over there. My regret, like I told you earlier, was I should have spent every day I had free over there and learned it, because I wouldn't have had to dealt with the public like I do now.
Right. So let me ask you this. Did you guys ever talk about, like, how long artificial insemination's been around, or did he ever talk about how long he had been doing it in cattle and livestock and stuff like that?
Yeah, he'd been – I mean, you know, the dog stuff, I think Spring Creek Rock of course, Steve Kenny, that had the Walker dogs, he bought all the Spring Creek Rock semen back in them days. He done a lot of business with Doc Scott. Doc done the inseminating with the Spring Creek Rock stuff. But I think Spring Creek Rock had been done back in maybe the 70s. And I'm off top of my head, I'm thinking Doc was doing the stuff with the cattle, you know, even years before that. Because he'd talk about getting off an evening drive to Mississippi and inseminate a bunch of cattle and drive home and be back to work the next day.
Wow. Yeah, I guess I was always pretty ignorant about it. I always thought it was like a, you know, late 90s, 21st century thing. But then I guess no doubt I'm ignorant about it, because then I find out that, like, Hard Time or Spanky.
Right.
The blue tick.
Spare Time Spanky.
Yeah, Spare Time Spanky. There's straws on him out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, you know, Spring Creek Rock heiress type stuff. So tell me about Juice. What kind of dog was he?
Juice was
just to hunt him every night. I mean, I drew him a few times.
Yeah, hunt him every night. He was just actually a pleasure dog. He was just that, a pleasure dog. You know, he got in there, got struck, get treed, have a coon. But he was a completely different dog than a night hunt. He knew when he was at a night hunt. And, you know, he had that little extra, you know, get off by himself. Back in them days, it wasn't a big deal to be split all the time. So he would, you know, he'd tree with another dog. But he just, you know, I had people that hunted with him night after night and then spectate me in a night hunt and say, you know, what's the deal with this dog? I'd never seen this out of him before. I said, we're at a night hunt. I said, he knows the difference.
Isn't that something? Some of those dogs, I got a blue tick female at the house right now. You take her out by herself, she looks pretty common. I mean, she trees plenty of coons and does a good job. But, man, when you take her to a night hunt, it's like she turns it up a notch.
Yep.
Yeah, I've had dogs like that in the past, so I know what you're talking about. Was he good about having coons?
Good about having coons. Very seldom took minus points. If he got a minus point, it was usually my fault.
Yeah. What kind of strike dog was he?
Good track dog. He's a dog. If he was running a track with a chopped mouth, you could tree him on the first locate. If he was running with a ball mouth, you better let him locate three times and then tree him. Like I say, he was a whale of a tree dog, you know, 120, 30 bark a minute tree dog, slobber mouth.
And he had a pretty good clear mouth on him, too.
Good clear mouth on him. You could hear him a long way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he was one of those. If I'd have been thinking back in the day, then you probably could have talked me into hunting one of those black and tans. You know, black and tan's the only breed of the hounds I have never owned.
Yeah.
It's the only one. And I don't know why. I've always liked looking at them. I've hunted with several good ones. You know, it just seems like the timing's always off. You end up with, you know, something else at the time and something comes available. That's just one of the dogs that I've never had. But I always like the looks of them, like the markings on them. I like the people that hunt black and tans. I don't know why I never made the –
Black and tan world's a good world to be in. I've made a million friends, and my children have made good friends ever. And, you know, they gave a talk today about the black and tan yearbook, that if you ever got in trouble anywhere, you could open your yearbook and find somebody to help you anywhere in the country, and there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, that's what I always remember about the Black and Tan Association, was that yearbook was just thick, and it was big. And, you know, the people that hunt black and tans are very loyal to their breed association. And I think I came to black and tan days the first time in the mid-80s probably. And it was amazing. You know, you pull into Charlie Brown Park when it was over in Flora.
Yep.
And you couldn't find a parking space. You had to walk if you didn't get there early. Campers set up everywhere and things like that.
Yeah, it's been like that for years. Of course, times have changed. The last two or three years, COVID come in. You know, we skipped a year and it just never bounced back yet. But it's, you know, they've got a good turnout this year.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So let's get back to Juice a little bit. I want to talk a little bit more about him. Tell me about Juice's, first of all, what have you accomplished with Juice? Why have you stuck with that? If you're hunting the sun off of him from semen 30 years ago, what was it about that dog that you want to keep reproducing off of that?
Yeah, they were good looking dogs, good tree dogs, balanced, you know, track dogs, pretty much trash free. Don't have a lot of trash with them. They're intelligent dogs too. I mean, Juice, I used to take him to the hunts. You know, I could put him in a pen at Winter Classic or Autumn Oaks and tell him to get in a pen. He'd hop the gate, get in a pen, tell him to stay there. He'd stay there all week, never had to time up. Somebody won't look at him. You holler at him, he'd jump the fence, stand there and let him look at him.
Yeah.
You know, pull him off a tree and unsnap him. He'd follow you out of the woods. And, you know, people wish their kids would mind like he did. I know I did.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So what kind of bloodline do you go back to?
He was a direct son of Ward's Beau, who was a popular stud owned by Ed Abel. He was out of Tennessee Judge. His mother was Sanders Hank, which was Guthrie's Deacon, Tennessee Fiddler, which back in them days were the popular. So he had all the popular dogs in him at that time.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, kind of with him and the semen, I'm kind of bringing some of that old blood back, crossing back with some of the modern stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm getting the type of dog that I enjoy hunting. You know, I'm the one that feeds him, so I'm the only one that really has to be happy with him.
Yeah, yeah.
But the results are real good on him.
Did you raise him from a pup?
No, bought him at Walker Days off a trade row years ago. He was he had a Grand Show Champion title on him. I'd seen him in the magazines, and a guy come and told me about him and said, if you want a tree dog, that's a dog you need to get a hold of. And so we bought him, and me and Tim Whitaker bought him together, and then I took him home and hunted him a few nights, and I liked him, so I bought Tim's out, and rest is history, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to track down Tim while I'm here. Tim and I go back farther than you right. And I do, back to the mid-'80s. But, yeah, Tim's made his mark, too, with his smoky dogs.
Smoky line. And that's and since that time, you know, talking about the smoky line, I've kind of fizzled out of hunting there for 3 or 4 years with my son and stuff. He wanted to get hunting, so I took the Smokey 3 dog that Tim had and just hunted him for a while. Then Tim decided he wanted to sell him. So I bought him and raised a couple of litters. So I've kind of incorporated the Smokey line of dogs into my dogs, too. So about everything I've got's got the Juice line, the Smokey line. I've got some of the modern stuff, the Batman line of dogs. So
which one of those Smokey dogs was monkey-faced?
That was the original Smokey.
The original Smokey.
Smokey 1, yeah.
Yep, and that's the one that I drew. I used to hunt a little red-bone female in the night hunts back in the 80s, and that's when Tim and I met, and I remember him hunting that monkey-faced mm-hmm. dog that was Smokey, the original Smokey dog.
A little bit of a high-tan dog, yeah.
Yep, yeah, high-tan and monkey-faced. It was, but he's really – does he throw that in his pups? Are you getting that now?
Very seldom.
What causes that?
I don't know. That's just something that's been crossed back in him years ago. I know I raised a litter out of him. Well, just about the time I bought the Juice dog, I'd bred a female to Smokey. And out of the litter, I had one female that was kind of marked like him. And she turned out to be a real good dog. I believe she got run over or something happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only pup, the litters I seen out of him, that was the only pup I ever seen that had that high tan on him.
Tim ever mentioned getting anything out of him like that?
No.
Any of the high tan stuff?
No, I don't. And I don't think, I don't remember some of the pups I've seen at Tim's house ever have anything like that.
Yeah. That must be recessive. Mm-hmm. It must be a recessive gene in there.
I mean,
somewhere.
I know that the monkey face itself, you see, still sticks out a little bit, but as far as the high tan on the legs or something, I've never seen that since then.
Yeah, you can usually spot a smoky, an older smoky dog because they have more brown on their mm-hmm. face, you know, than a lot of, you know, some of the other lines of black and tans, like the Wagners and stuff like
right.
that, you know. The Smokies always had a little more tan, but the whole full monkey face thing was a rare thing to see.
Hey, I want to talk to you about Coon Hunting Lights. Over the course of my hunting career, I have had a lot of lights, starting with the night light, 6-volt, the wheat light with the gel cell battery, and the 5100 head. But the first cool light I ever had was a Cajun, and it was a Sweet 16. The battery was a big square box, and it was worn on a belt on your side. It weighed about a gazillion pounds, and it, there's a reason why the old coon hunters have limps and have bad backs. Fast forward to 2022, we go around the hunts, we see all these cap lights, everything weighs 18 ounces. There's enough light modules on there to land aircraft, and the components for each light are basically the same. What it really comes down to is the person that puts that light together. At Cajun Lights, L.W. Nixon puts every light together that he sells. I've been using the Cajun Bayou for a couple of weeks now, and I am impressed. This is a simple and highly functional light that is lightweight, and I've spent enough time with LW to know that he is going to take special care in putting your light together. Whether you choose a Rogueru, the Micro Gator, the Bayou Light, all high quality. He's got hunting vests over there. The lights attached to the vests, they're interchangeable. I mean, the options are endless. You can check it all out at CajunLights.com. LW is going to take care of you over there. Check out Cajun Lights at CajunLights.com.
I was about 8 when I started coon hunting.
How'd you get into it?
My dad was I liked to hunt. I mean, I lived kind of at the edge of town, had woods behind my house, and I spent all my free time. My grandparents had a farm. I was always in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was a square dance caller, and we went up in up in Indiana. He called square dances every Saturday night, and a guy he come to the dances was a coon hunter up there in the Wabash River bottoms.
Really?
And he invited us up, and so dad would take me up a lot of nights. We'd go up there on Friday night and coon hunt, and then he'd have to turn around and drive back up there the next night and call square dances. And then some guys there around home knew I liked to coon hunt, so I started hunting with them, and so the fever hit.
Yeah. At 8 years old?
Yeah, I was about 11 time I really got hunting all the time. Had my own dog. I mean, my first dog was a high tan dog too. He was wandering around town. I caught him, took him home, and he wasn't much count, but
the first ones just they never are.
No.
You know.
And I bought another high tan dog I didn't know he was gonna be a high tan dog. I bought him out of an ad in one of the old magazines. Had him shipped in here, and he was a high tan dog, and he about twice as old as he was supposed to be, but he would tree a coon. And then I got my first registered dog and had registered dogs ever since.
Yeah, how old do you think that dog was?
Well, he's supposed to be 6 or 7. He got down on me, took him to the vet, and they said he had heartworms. He said he's more like 11 or 12.
I had that same thing happen. You know, I missed, I don't know how many hounds I had there when I was younger, but when I was 17, there was a man in our community named John Harris, and he had a dog out of Hearns Red Eagle Dick, and his Rock Creek Charlie Pride was that dog's name. And John was he was probably about 70, and he just couldn't go anymore, and he knew I loved to hunt. He just gave me that old dog, and that's when the bug. I knew I enjoyed coon hunting. But when Charlie came along and he could I mean, we'd go hunting every night. And we might tree a coon once or twice a week mm-hmm. with the caliber of dogs we had. And I still remember the first night I turned him loose as Frosty. And I met a buddy of mine out of woods. He was already there. He already had his old Queenie dog in there running the track. And I cut Charlie into her. And he went in there and struck a track and went on past and got treed and had a coon. You know,
yeah.
those first dogs that you get, you remember them, that actually it's like, my dog treed a coon.
Yep, them were the days. I mean, you just couldn't wait for, you know, I went through a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they were all, had a good point or two about them, but I just never had a complete dog till I was, you know, I bought a pup in 78. And he turned into be a real nice dog. I think I was too young to realize what I had at the time, and
mm-hmm.
by the time I realized what I had, I was, you know, he was getting old. I campaigned him, needed a win to be a grand knight when he died, but, you know, he was, he was an outstanding hound after I started hunting him. I mean, just the dogs I put him up against and won against it. But I say that's part of being a kid, I guess.
How old would you have been in 78?
13.
Yeah, 13 years old in 78. And what was he out of? You remember?
Yeah, he was off of a dog called Shaker Hill George, who went back to the grandson of Tall Timber Roy, which my first registered black and tan pup was a direct son of Tall Timber Roy, who was a Bloodworth bred dog down in Tennessee. She got killed by a car when she wasn't very old. And I bought a couple of more young dogs off of Tall Timber Roy. Well, one pup and one grand pup off of Tall Timber Roy. Then I ended up buying this pup. I was out in Ohio and found this pup off of Shaker Hill George. The mother was off a Screaming Eagle and Eads Bruiser. And the pups wasn't ready to go yet, but the guy was coming to Autumn Oaks that year.
What was the dog's name? Dick the Bruiser?
Eads Bruiser. Eads Black Bruiser.
Eads Black Bruiser. Yeah. I was going to say Dick the Bruiser was a wrestler.
Yeah, he was a wrestler.
He was a big-time wrestler back in the day. Terre Haute.
Yeah, I used to go see him on Friday nights. I've got his autograph, too, at home. So.
That's funny.
No, I really do have his autograph.
I believe it. But, he was big in Indiana, Dick the Bruiser was.
From Indiana, yeah.
That's why it caught my attention, because I thought you said Dick the Bruiser, yeah, and I thought somebody named a dog after a wrestler.
They wrestled about once or twice a month in Terre Haute.
Yeah. He's not a wrestler. He's a wrestler. He's a big-time wrestler.
Dick was a brawler.
Yeah, he was.
But Eads Bruiser was a big influence back in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And they brought him to Autumn Oaks. I bought him, picked him up over there. And, you know, he, of course, back then, you know, we didn't even start hunting dogs till he was a year old.
Isn't that something?
Today, these guys want these dogs running trend when they're 7, 8 months old.
Let's talk about that in a minute, how it's changed. How it's changed from back in the day. But tell us about the dogs.
Well, then, you know, you take him out and play with them, but you didn't do a whole lot. And, he was 13, 14 months old, and just one night, we was coon hunting with some old dogs, and he just went over here and treed a coon by himself.
Yeah.
And the minute he treed, you know, he was a pull pressure tree dog from that moment on. But, you know, today, I mean, a guy had a dog tree 6 or 7 months old, he really had something.
Yeah. Remember, so your pup treed at 13, 14 months old. What was he doing prior to that?
Just going out there messing around, pretty much.
And it's just like that night the light bulb came on.
Just walked over the hill down there in the woods, started treeing. Other dogs were out hunting, and you know he had a slick tree, but he treed.
I was going to ask you if he had a coon.
And we turned him loose again, and he treed with the old dogs the next tree. I climbed a tree as an old wild cherry tree in a fence row, and I shook the coon out. He never looked back.
Oh, man.
But I did have a son out of him. Actually, the first litter of pups I ever raised out of him. You know, at 6 months old, you know, he was running training his own coon. Started about 5 months old. And I hunted him all that season. Treated a lot of coon with him. Laid him up after season. Went out in the spring. He wasn't worth a count for anything. Like he didn't know what to do. I ended up selling him for a bear dog.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what do you think the differences are? I mean, back in the day, like the time when we're talking about 70s and 80s, you could go to a night hunt and there would be blue ticks and black and tans and red bones. I mean, all the colors were there. They were all present. And
the hunts were full. The bench shows were full.
Yeah.
Every breed represented.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't uncommon. I mean, what you go to a club hunt and there'd be a bench show, and the bench show would last 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have 40 or 50 entries in the bench show.
Yep.
Classes for each one of the breeds.
Yep. All six breeds would be there.
Mm-hmm.
Best male and best female of show, there'd be six dogs up there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the night hunts would have.
The night hunts were 50, 60 dogs a hunt.
I was getting ready to say 60.
RQE would be 120 or 30 dogs a hunt.
Yeah, buddy. Yep, for sure. How do you think it was different back then than it is now?
Just dogs were different. Of course, back then the dogs packed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you didn't talk a lot because when dogs barked, you kind of had to listen because it was a race to see who get first tree. I mean, and you know, it's funny, you look at the ads back then. Old so-and-so made a night champion with two firsts and a seventh or eighth or ninth.
Yeah.
And now they're three firsts or two firsts and a second. Now, of course, now they're just cast wins.
But, right.
But even just a few years ago when they were the old format, you know, two firsts a second, first and 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them dogs make night champion. You know, they may have 10 places before they ever got their first place win. So
back in the day.
Back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I had a pile of, you know, like fourth and fifth place trophies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Chasing
and,
it.
And the Hunts, you know, they gave full set of trophies.
Yeah.
First through 10th. And
I wish I still had all my old trophies. Have you still got yours?
I've got a few. I had everything at my parents' house when they passed away and we sold the place. I had no place to put them, and I gave a few of them away to some organizations to change the tops on them, but a lot of stuff got thrown in the burn pile.
Check out Dogs Are Treated at dogsaretreated.com. You can find Paws Are Protected, Dogs Are Hydrated, the highest quality leashes and tie-outs in the industry. Great customer service. It's owned by Houndsmen, gear built by Houndsmen. DogsAreTreated.com. Use our promo code HXP 20% off at checkout and get 20% off your order. The bills are paid. Let's take this one home. Here's Jeff Wood to finish this one up.
Well, getting back to how things have changed, I mean, why was it back in the day? I mean, it wasn't if you go to a hunt today and it's not red bone days and there's somebody there with a red bone, I mean, it's kind of uncommon. And same mm-hmm. thing could be said with black and tan. You know, you're seeing a lot of – you still see quite a few English dogs, blue ticks here and there, but a lot of walker dogs. If somebody shows up with a black and tan, you know, it's kind of unusual for a competition hunt.
And I don't hunt the hunts like I do, but still, it's just – I mean, they're not the hunters out there to start with. I don't think the timber's out there for people to hunt in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I guess time has taken its toll.
Yeah. Well, you've had some walkers too.
Yeah, I've had a couple of walker dogs.
And why do you think the black and tans seem like they've fallen behind, or have they, or is that a perception? Because you just don't see them. I mean,
right.
When you go to Super Stakes or you go someplace mm-hmm. like that, it's walker dogs.
I mean, I think part of it's genetics. I mean, they've bred these walker dogs to, you know, I mean, honestly, to probably be a little superior dog. And I've hunted, drawed a lot of walker dogs. You know, I've been beat by walkers. I've beat walkers. But, you know, just the numbers alone, I mean, I don't know what it is, 100-1 for a black dog for every walker dog.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in sheer numbers, they're just going to have an advantage.
Yeah. I always felt like that the walker guys were a little more in tune with they did, and I'm talking about, I mean, I'm sitting here wearing a plot shirt for crying out loud. So, but you know, it's one of those deals where the walker guys were more in tune with breeding to fit that scorecard. And,
exactly.
And those
they bred
winners.
For a competition though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go over here and talk to these people at Black and Tan Days this weekend, a lot of them guys, black and tan days is the only hunt they'll hunt all year.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be at another hunt. They coon hunt. They're pleasure hunters. Where you go to walker days, them guys, you know, they were at a hunt last week. They'll be at a hunt next week. They'll be hunting the week after that.
They're running for truck tickets.
Yeah,
they're
them dogs are, you know, they're making them for the scorecard.
Right, right. Yeah, it's just, and so when you take that into consideration, I mean, it's easier to find a dog that can compete.
Right.
At that level. And now, if you can find one that's black and tan, then you really got something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you make a big splash quick.
Yep.
So that's kind of, you know, we had that big country dog.
Right.
And that's what set him apart. It's like, where did this dog come from? And just because he was a different color, it was kind of like, holy crap, there's something besides a, you know, tri-colored walker dog that's doing something. And the same thing would happen with a red bone or a black
yep.
and tan. But it's always been my experience, I think. What I've seen is, and I don't fault them for it, because I'm a traditional type guy. You know, I like the old-time stuff. I like tradition and things like that. And some of these old-time black and tan breeders just won't move out. They don't care what anybody else is doing. This is what we like. This is what we want to hunt. And we're going to keep doing it.
I mean, some of the guys are hunting the same type of dog today they hunted 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. No faster, no slower. You know, start the same, but that's what they're happy with. And like I say, they're the one to feed them. So,
well, you mentioned, you know, you're breeding on juice.
Right.
That dog was 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So how are his pups competing in today's world? Are they competitive, or are they being competition hunted?
The male dog I've got right now is the first one I don't raise a lot of pups out of him, but yeah, he's, you know, I just started him. I need one more win to be a night champion, but he's been bred a little bit. He's got some Batman in him, so he's got that little bit more of an independent streak that modern dogs are, you know, get by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
She's not really a sister. She's the same breeding, just flip-flop. She's juice breeding, and she's out of Batman with juice breeding on the bottom side. We've been real successful with her the last couple of years. I don't know what she's anything super, but she's, you know, she's a coon treer. She gets by herself, and when she's on, she's on. She's pretty tough to beat, but she gets by herself and treats a lot of coons. And, you know, she was a black and tan, Purina black and tan winner this year. She won high scoring female to Autumn Oaks last 2 years ago. Got in the top 100 at the World Hunt last year, but mm-hmm. you know, she can be competitive with anything out there, I believe.
Yeah. Well, you never did tell. I think I cut you off and switched direction before you told us what all you've won with the old juice dog.
Yeah. And he wasn't. I didn't win a lot of big hunts. Some Illinois State hunt. He was high scoring black and tan at the World Hunt in 92. Governor's Cup. I just never pushed him into big hunts, probably like I should have.
Mm-hmm.
But
is he a Hall of Fame dog? In the Black and Tan Association?
No, not yet. We were just talking about that the other day, and they've changed the parameters for that. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I'm going to get him nominated or something next year. I mean, you know, he sired a little over 400 pups, I think. I don't remember what his records are off the top of my head, but there's a lot of your dogs you see out there today. If you go back far enough, he's in their pedigrees.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the top dogs. Because I'll still look at those pedigrees and stuff, and I'll see that juice dog, and, mm-hmm. and you know, I know right where it came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many generations – I wonder how many generations that would be if it was 30 years ago. They'd probably still be showing up in some of those six and seven generations if it was just
– Yeah, he's still – I mean, there's still a few dogs. Somebody will advertise a dog, and I'll see a dog maybe back in his third generation. I'll say, well, I know that's a grandpup of him, or you know,
yeah.
great-grandpup of him. So, of course, I'm kind of a student of pedigrees anyhow. So.
Yeah, yeah.
I love pedigrees.
Okay, let's just talk about that, because this podcast goes out all over the world. We've got people in the West that don't keep pedigrees on their dogs. They don't register
right.
stuff. Why do you study pedigrees? That's a good topic.
I just think pedigrees an influence. And don't get me wrong, there's great dogs that got terrible pedigrees.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even know what their pedigree is. But
and there's terrible dogs that got great pedigrees.
Exactly. But a pedigree is a foundation. This whole dog breeding business is a crapshoot, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But you've got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a dog with ability that's got the pedigree to behind it, same way in the horse business. We're in the horses too. I'm same way in the horses. And you know, when I was single, and even with my wife now, I mean, you know, she come home and there's pedigree scattered all over the house.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, this dog to this dog.
So you're like a pedigree junkie on horses and dogs, black and tan.
I've got all the horse books. I've got all the dog books. I've got a picture of that dog, or I've got a picture of that horse.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think? You started to touch on it there. It's a foundation. So as a breeder, how do you use pedigrees to choose crosses and things like that?
Well, just, I mean, like some of the dogs I've got now, they've got solid pedigrees. You know, I just seen a dog advertised the other day. Somebody put an ad on him on one of the dog sites. You know, I knew probably three quarters of the dog on his pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and most of them I'd even hunted with. So, I mean, if I'm going down the road wanting to breed to something, you know, this dog would, he would catch my attention. For one, he's a coon dog. For one, I know what's all behind him. I mean, mm-hmm. I know them dogs. They got the traits I desire or I don't desire. I mean, if I wouldn't like him, I wouldn't use him. But
right.
But you know, there's history behind him that says he could be a possible good sire.
Yeah, he's got the genetic makeup.
Got the genetic makeup.
Yeah, to do his part. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think. The whole genetic thing is very much understudied, especially among coonhounds and things like that. If you get into cattle farming and you get into raising hogs and stuff, those guys are dialed in on genetics.
But you know, we're with a coonhound, we're breeding for so many.
Exactly.
You know, if you're breeding a cow, you're breeding for milk production, or you're breeding a beef cow for beef.
How much meat you can pack on the bone,
or show cow for hair or whatever you want.
Yeah.
Horses the same way. You breed them for speed. Draft horse, you're wanting size. You know, quarter horse, you're wanting either a headset or a to be cow or something. You know, we're breeding these coon dogs. They got to look a certain way. They've got to run a track a certain way. They've got to tree a certain way. They've got to hunt with other dogs or hunt by themselves. And we're trying to throw so much stuff into one animal.
I think it's more demanding than. I raised retrievers for mm-hmm. several years. What I did with those retrievers, they were never out of pocket. You know, they were under my supervision the entire time. And I guess you could say the same thing about hounds to a certain extent, but they're not. That, you know, we've got Garmins and we've got e-collars and we got that sort
of
stuff.
That dog's still a mile away doing something.
Exactly. He's still a mile away, and that is what makes it so difficult to come up with, you know, 10 out of 10 of a litter turning out to be top coon dogs or consistently doing it. And the people that can do it just absolutely amaze me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people's got a gift for certain dogs. I mean, they could take up anything and make a dog out of it. I've got to have a little bit of talent in them to bring it out, I guess.
I was just talking about this the other day. Yeah, you know, we're having this discussion about the last several years. I've had a pretty high success rate with pups that I keep and raise turn out to be, you know, good to above average coon trained dogs. But I think what it is I just finally learned what I liked and I recognized what I can work with. So I take the easier route.
Right.
You know, I stay away from that dog that I've had that maybe I don't know about, and I look for those traits in those pups that I do like. And so it helps me be a better trainer. When I know what I like and when I've done it enough and you can see, hey, I can work with that. I can work with that. There's some things that I see and it's just like, I'm not going to work with that. I won't do it. You know, yep. Sometimes it's just stuff I don't like in a dog.
And there's a spot, whether it's looks or something they do in the woods one night or something, I'm done. It's time for them to go somewhere else. To
for me, you know what it is, for a lot of it is for me, kennel manners.
Yeah.
You know, if I've never liked a dog that paces, as I'd call them, turd grinders, that just can't stand still, can't just chill out in the kennel. You know, if it's barking or it's pacing or anything like that. I had a pup here that I just got rid of. Super potential. I mean, this little pup took a bear track and ran a bear track and bayed with the older dogs at 6 months old. He was a hunting machine. I'd turn him loose around the house, and he'd be gone. I mean, he was not mm-hmm. staying around the house. Like, he got me in trouble with the neighbors. and I'm talking a mile and a half away, my you know, my neighbors up there right. would get pictures of him on the trail cam at 5 and 6 months old. And but the little idiot, he was staying inside his doghouse, and he was pissing in his doghouse. And the only thing I can figure is I had a male dog right next to him, so he was kind of intimidated dominance-wise. Yeah. And first time it happened, I mean, it was this past winter, I walk out there, and it's like, man, is that doghouse leaking? And I fixed up the doghouse and I tarped it because I didn't have another doghouse put on there, so I tarped it and went back out a week or so later, and the sucker, that doghouse was actually had urine standing in it. And I thought, well, you got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. That's after I cleaned it out, and I thought, that's a deal breaker. And I ended up, a guy contacted me. He's like, hey, you know where there's just a pup like this? And I said, or bred a certain way. I said, just so happened I have one. And I told him exactly what he was doing. He says, what do you want for him? I said, if you want him, you can come and get him because he's not going to stay here. There's just certain things that are deal breakers for me.
And I've got a female. She's not like that, but just in the kennel. And, she I think she got that little extra, and that's the only thing right now saving her. She just, yeah. I mean, she's not crazy, but she got a habit or two that I just kind of hits me wrong. But like I say, we're working through it. I mean, she could be worse. I've had worse. There's a dog I had, talking about dogs in the kennel, and here a few years ago was outstanding dog. But he was, his just back and forth, and it just drove me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had him for another guy, and I just couldn't handle it. He could have been a winning sucker, I think.
Well, the guy that got this pup for me, he's sending me videos of this old dude out there training coons by himself, rolling in there, big locates, and just blowing it down.
Yep.
I asked him, I said, hey, have you had this problem? He's like, nope, haven't had any issues, and those are the ones that I used to sit back and I'd be like, man, I wish I'd have kept that dog. But now anymore, I'm just like, he's in a better place.
Yep, that's exactly right.
He is in a better place. Yep. No regrets. Well, hey, tell me about I want to talk about you working for Bill Boatman.
Okay.
First tell everybody who Bill Boatman is, because there's going to be some people who are listening
to this
that don't know.
When I was a kid and started hunting, the Bill Boatman catalog was like your Christmas wish book.
Yeah.
Come in the mail, two or three times a year out in Bainbridge, Ohio. So Bill Boatman was a dog supply guy. He was also a big black and tan breeder. Run full-page ads in the magazines every month. Always stood two or three stud dogs. So he had a stud dog called Screaming Eagle. And we had a female coming heat. We wanted to breed to him. So we went out there and took her out there on Saturday, I believe, me and my dad and a neighbor. And Eagle, he couldn't get her bred at the time. The guy said, well, if you want to leave her here, we'll try to get her bred. So I wanted to go hunting out there. And in Ohio, you couldn't hunt on Sunday nights at that time. And Junior Ralston was the kennel manager. And he was from Terre Haute, which is just where you worked at, just across the state line from me. And he told my dad if I wanted to stay out there for a couple of weeks, he'd bring me home because he had to come back to Terre Haute. He agreed to let me stay out there. So I was 12 years old at the time. I spent 2 weeks out there, helped take care of dogs, got a coon hunt.
Hang on a second. You were 12 years old at the time.
12 years old.
You rode out there with your dad.
Yeah, my dad and my neighbor took me out there.
Okay.
Or not my neighbor, but the guy we hunted with.
So when your dad showed up at home without you, what did your mom say?
Well, luckily, we called her before he left me out there.
Okay,
we had to get her permission.
All right, I got
now,
you
I don't
now.
Want everybody out there thinking I'm a mommy's boy, because I'm not. But but anyhow, he left me some money to buy a pair of pants and a shirt, and mom sent me a care package, and I survived the 2 weeks. And so that's where I bought that buck dog out there years ago when I've seen him out there at a guy's house. And then so the following summer when I was 13, they asked me if I wanted to come out there and spend the summer. So
well, what'd you do that 2 weeks you were out there?
I just that first 2 weeks I just kind of loafed. I helped with pups and I helped feed dogs and we coon hunted at night, done just everything around there.
Uh-huh.
So the next year, I spent the whole summer out there and basically worked out there. I mean, I cleaned kennels, fed dogs, fed pups. We'd have 10, 12 litters of pups at a time out there. Just, of course, people come in, you'd answer the phone in the office if somebody called. And you always had people stopping in there to go hunting, and I'd take them hunting. And so I got a lot of contacts out there when I was, of course, like I say, I'm a pedigree nut, and they had files of pedigrees out there.
What were some of the dogs that Bill had out there when you were there?
At that time, let's see, the Eads Black Bruiser dog I talked about.
Yeah.
He had had him. He'd passed away since then. But at that time, he had Screaming Eagles. Belonged to W.L. Davis from Virginia. He had a dog called Midnight Trouble. Belonged to Sutton up in northern Illinois. He was a Wagner bred dog. Had a dog called Trump the Third from Ohio. He was a Wagner bred dog.
These are black and tan dogs.
These are all black and tans, yep. Yeah. Knight Rider's Beretta. He was a Wagner bred, Bloodworth bred dog. He'd been a national grand show champion a couple of years before that. Big time bear dog.
Mm-hmm.
What else did they have in it? Had a dog called Sounder. Davis's Black Powder, they had him. They just lost Cypress Creek Jim. So there's several good dogs stood out there.
So let me understand this right. Bill would contact these people. He brought these dogs into his kennel.
A lot of the stud dogs were leased, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. He stood them at stud there at his place.
Yeah, they had about five or six studs, and then there's probably, I don't know, looking back, what was there, 50 females there probably?
Mm-hmm.
But he had kind of a modern laboratory and kennels and everything up there.
Yeah, and so if somebody wanted to go breed to a top, Bill would go try to find these top of the line,
yeah,
black and tans.
I mean, he kind of had his program. He had them, the studs he had were kind of for his use, but he stood them at public for anybody else too.
Yeah, so he would lease it, he'd have the dog under contract, and then people could come to Bill Boatman's.
Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of a genius thing.
So you could come and breed a Screaming Eagle, and if you got there and you didn't like Screaming Eagle, you could breed this dog or whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to dig around home. I've got pictures with, you know, all these big stud dogs standing out front on the sidewalk posing them. And
yeah.
I thought I was something then.
Yeah, you said you were mm-hmm. What did you say? You were that close to being on the cover.
Yeah, about a eighth of an inch from being on the cover of the Bill Boatman catalog. But they cut my picture out.
They had a picture of the dog and you were on the other end of the leash.
Yeah, they had a couple of pictures of the dog standing on the tailgate and I was sitting off the side on the lead. So.
What else did Bill have out there? I know because I remember the Bill Boatman catalog.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some pretty crazy. Actually, it was innovative stuff.
He was very innovative for the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I had from him, it was a double, had two lights on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And one, it was shaped like an oval.
Yep.
Had a clip on the back, went on the front of your helmet, and you could flip between a floodlight and a spotlight.
I still got one.
Do you really?
There's not very many people got them. Because
I wish I still had mine.
I got one of them, and it was a kind of a more of a prototype.
Yeah.
It never did. I don't think I even really hardly put it out. But I've got one at home in a box.
It's brown. Is it brown?
Brown. Yep.
Yep. It's brown.
Got it. Got an old Dynalite, which you know everybody thinks is the Dynalite. That was a light everybody carried on, a 6-volt or 6-cell light,
yep.
Carried on a strap over your shoulder. So when you found them, then you could use that Dynalite to shine them. It had a charger that you took the lens off and recharged them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everybody thought he just made stuff for coon hunters, but you know, them Dynalites were sold to like airports and airlines, and I mean, it was a big business.
Yeah. What other sorts of innovative products did Bill keep over there?
Well, you know, they had the Greenbrier coats. You know, they started out with them heavy coats for briars and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's probably one of the first guys with chaps. You know, he always had somebody bringing something up.
Yeah, he was a mover and a shaker,
yeah.
For sure. Always
yeah.
Tried to stay in front. I was trying to he always had vet supplies.
Yeah, you buy supplies, collars.
Yeah.
Leashes. I mean, he's one of the first guys probably come out with the Yeah, they called it Dayglo, but it's basically the nylon stuff that we use today.
Yeah, and then there were a lot of hand drawn pictures in his catalog, and I remember those Dayglo collars. He had a guy. The dog was standing out there, and the hunter was standing back, shining his light, and he had
showed a reflect.
Yeah. He had. I'll tell you something else. He had. You could tell he was. Catering to the dog traders because he had those slide-on nameplates.
Yeah, slide-on nameplates.
Where the collar would thread through two D-rings through the nameplates and mm-hmm. stuff. That way you could switch them out.
I remember being in I went to the showroom all the time there in town, and you know, he had different things mounted, but he had a, of course, you used to see the guys with the name tag machine, just a little hand.
Yeah.
Hand, well, he had a giant machine in there, looked like a big typewriter, but it was 2 foot across, and they could just put them plates in there and just type them just like a typewriter.
No kidding.
Had big old bars, stamped them in there, yeah.
They were good ones, too, because it wasn't just a little dent. I mean, if I remember right, it did it in reverse, didn't it? So it popped the nameplate out?
Yeah, it was. You could see it on the other side. I remember that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah,
those were good nameplates back in those days.
Bill back then had the Fruitdale Sportsman's Club, and it was a big trade day swap meet type thing. I remember going to that out there when I was out there, swapping guns and dogs. And
yeah,
swim races and field trials, and you name it, they had it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You think we'll ever get back those days?
No, I'd like to. they were good times. I have no regrets.
Oh man, yeah. It was. That's quite an adventure for a 12, 13 year old kid.
Yeah, just the year I picked that dog up. You know, my parents took me to all. That was the last. I think that was the last year of Autumn Oaks at Greencastle, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
My dad took me over on Friday, kicked me out. And the guy was going to, he had arrangements made for a guy to bring me home Sunday on his way through.
No kidding.
I had a little bitty tent and about 20 bucks. And a dog and 13 years old.
Times have changed, haven't they?
They've changed, yeah.
So let's compare like black and tan days. we started to touch on it. How many entries did they have at Black and Tan Days last night in the Black Hunt?
I don't know what they had total. I kind of glanced up there a while ago before you called me and seen what the thing was. I know they had, I think, 15 or 16 RQE casts, but I can't tell you what their total number was last night.
Yeah.
But I know, last year I think we had 140 or 50 dogs the first night and 120 the second night where – back in them days, it would have been 350 the first night.
Yeah, I brought
300 the second night.
I brought a walker dog to Black and Tan Days probably. Well, you hunted with Joe, that old Joe dog I had. Brought him over here, and I forget how many entries there were, like 275 entries.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy back in the early 90s. How many entries would it be?
All Black and Tan hunt back in the days was 200, 250 dogs just for the all black, just big get together hunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why everybody comes to Black and Tan Days.
Yep. That's right. Does it still start? Used to it, people would start rolling in on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And guys would just hunt and fellowship and eat and tell little stories all week long.
Yeah. There's still a couple guys come early. I was here Wednesday. There were maybe 40 people here Wednesday night when I first got here. But they had the Champions Classic hunt, which has just been added the last few years. But there wasn't very many outside people in here yet.
Yeah. Back in the day, though, man, but if you came on Wednesday, there were already several hundred people on the grounds. Vendors were already open.
Yeah.
I felt like the biggest event of the year for just people that came together. It wasn't really, you weren't competing all week. It was like a big family reunion.
A family reunion, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jeff, what else? We miss anything?
No, I think we've covered a lot.
I think we have, too. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you gave me a shout. Like I say, I picked up that phone. I thought, who's this?
I had to sneak attack you. I called you on Andy Canada's phone.
Called me on Andy's phone. And
yeah.
I figured it was him. And yeah, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to go try to find Tim Whitaker.
Yeah.
Get him
Good
on
luck.
Here. Yeah, yeah. Well, Jeff, we appreciate you sitting down. I think everybody's going to enjoy the walk down memory lane. I mean, thinking about working for Bill Boatman and still breeding off the old juice dog, that's pretty amazing stuff, man.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride.
Yeah. And you're not – how old are you, 56?
Just turned 57.
57. So you're still a young man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're in good shape.
Good shape still.
Yep. Still get through the woods good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't hear worth a lick.
Can't hear, can't see. But
well, Jeff, until next time, buddy, you follow your hound.
Remember in the pre-roll where I mentioned a story about black and tans, gangsters, and moonshine? Here it is.
All right. The best conversations always happen when the microphone's off. You're good.
Okay.
We'll catch this. You got to tell this story about the movie.
Okay. So I was in my family's house one day, and my dad went in the house and come back out and said, I was wondering on the telephone. I asked him who it was. He didn't know. So I went in there and talked to these people. Well, he did say it's somebody from some movie studio. So I went in there. I figured it was a joke. And they were from a movie studio. They were shooting an episode of The Untouchables, which used to be a TV series about Al Capone or Dillinger. Al Capone, I guess it was, and back in the moonshine days.
Bootleggers.
Yeah. So I talked to these people, and they said, hey, we need some coonhounds for this episode, and they have to be black and tan coonhounds. So somebody gave us your name to get a hold of. So I said, well, yeah, I've got black and tans.
Did you ever find out who gave them your name?
Never did.
I mean, how do you go from having a movie studio in Chicago to finding Jeff Wood in Edgar, Illinois?
Yeah, I don't know, but they did.
Edgar County, Illinois. Huh.
So long story short, we got to talking, and I said, yeah, I can come up with some dogs. And they said, how many you need? Well, how many have you got? I think I ended up taking 3 or 4 dogs up. And so then we got to talking, and they said, well, you know, we need this, we need that, and we need some pigs, and we need this. So this episode was supposed to be set in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Well, this was being filmed in the outskirts of Chicago in a nature preserve, come to find what I found out later. But you drive, you know, off the main highway, and you're in a nature preserve. It looks like you're in Kentucky, log cabins and log barns. And so I took a trailer full of hogs and dog box full of coon dogs. And
you have any chickens on board?
No, I didn't. Somebody had chickens. I didn't have the chickens, but we had chickens in the movie.
Yeah.
So I had to put these hogs in the hog pen, big old 400-pound sows. And so a couple of the parts we needed, they done a recording with the older man and old woman. They were supposed to be the parents of these bootlegging boys. And so I had to make old Juice lay down between them, just where he was sitting on the porch, and the revenuers were there questioning him. And so in the movie, I mean, you wouldn't see me, but I was just around the corner of the barn telling Juice, stay, 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 and he just laid there. So then we had to do another scene where one of the guys was walking out of the woods, and he had supposed to have his dog walking alongside of him, and the revenuers confronted him and had a shootout. But they had to get this dog to bark. And so I put a little bitty fine cord on Juice to make him where this guy could step on it, keep him from taking off.
Yeah.
But we couldn't get him to bark. I said, well, how are we going to get this dog to bark? And of course, they had their camera with the big bulletproof thing on it, because this guy had to shoot the old lever action rifle at the camera.
Uh-huh.
But they had them microphone booms, and they had one of them big old fuzzy microphone covers.
Yeah.
And I took that microphone cover, and I got to shaking it and squalling like a coon in the background to get him to barking. So this guy's standing on his leash, so he can't go anywhere, and he's barking and like he's wanting to get after somebody. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So he made it look like he was trying to get after the revenuers.
After the revenuers, yeah.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
And we were, like I say, it looked like it was Kentucky, and I think I spent 2 days up there. I mean, and it was quite an experience, because the movie star sat right next to you. You ate out of their catering bus with them.
Who were the stars on? You remember?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I still see them in shows. I can't tell you what their name was. A couple of guys have really been popular.
So you can remember coon dog names, but you can't remember movie star names.
No. I've got pictures at home. I can show you. I see them in a movie. I say, hey, I was, you know, ate with that guy, or I was one of the guys in that movie. But yeah, I can't remember. I can't tell you what their name is right offhand. Like I say, a couple of them were pretty popular later on.
See, that's something I didn't know. I didn't know Juice was a movie star.
Yeah, he got about a split second. But
yeah.
It's funny because, you know, we filmed quite a bit of time actual filming, and for maybe 5 seconds is all he was. I used to have the video there at home somewhere.
I'd like to see that. Just put it in context. That's pretty cool. I'm glad I turned the recorder back on for that one, Jeff.
Yeah.
We're going to have to put this in the bonus segment.
That was one of my first and only trips to Chicago.
I don't blame you there. We could record another podcast about hauling dogs through Chicago on my end. But all right, man. That'll do it.
All right. Good enough.
Thanks, Jeff.
And that will do it for this episode of the Houndsman XP Podcast. Thank you for tuning in and listening, spending your time with us here on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network. Big announcement Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, May 18th. Heath Hyatt is rolling out his own show. It's going to be good. You're going to be surprised at the material he's going to cover and how deep he's going to go into training issues and just being a better houndsman. You're going to love it. Make sure you're checking us out over on the Apple Podcast platform. Leave us a review. Leave us a rating. We love you. Thanks for tuning in. And now you follow your hounds and I'll follow mine.